We're going to call the meeting to order. This is Health and Human Service Finance Committee on March 12th. I'm just going to note, going to run about 15 minutes late, and hopefully we can get through the four bills and the OLA report in the time allotted today. So I think we are, I don't have minutes in front of me, so we're going to skip that for right now, and I'm looking to see whether we have a quorum. Yes, we do have 11 members who have checked in, so we have a quorum. The first bill on our agenda today is House File 139, Representative Nornes. And Representative Dean, would you like to move the bill? Thank you. Welcome, Madam Representative Nornes. Your bill has been moved, so if you'd like to testify and introduce your guests.
Okay, before we begin, we do have a handout we'd like to have the page to help us with. Thank you, committee members, for hearing our bill, House File 139. Fergus Falls has, in our community, the newest veterans home in the state of Minnesota, and we're very proud of that. At the same time, we're here today to talk about two other nursing homes that we have in our community, Pioneer Home and also the Roan Home. And the issue is the reimbursement rates. The state of Minnesota has kind of set a precedent, and each community that hosts a veterans home is currently being reimbursed at the metro rates, with the exception of Fergus Falls and Laverne. So House File 139, actually what it's doing is bringing the rates closer in line and then increasing the rates to our homes in Fergus Falls to that metro rate. I don't believe it actually equalizes completely, but it's getting closer. I have two testifiers with us today. Nathan Johnson, he is from the Pioneer Home, and John Swears, who is from the Brown Home. And they would like to testify this morning. I believe Nathan will be first.
Well, good morning.
Welcome to the committee, and if you would say your name into the microphone, please, before you begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Nathan Johnson. I'm a licensed nursing home administrator, have been for 13 years, and for the past 5 years I've served at Pioneer Care in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. Pioneer Care was incorporated as a nonprofit independent entity in 1928. We've enjoyed 85 years of proud history of providing high quality of service of care to seniors in our area. Of course, with each decade in history, Pioneer's history has brought new challenges. Nearly a decade and a half ago, approximately 16 or 17 years, the Veterans Administration chose Fergus Falls as a site for a new VA nursing home. And since that time, both Pioneer Care and LB Homes have been at a severe economic disadvantage. Most notably is the wage and compensation disparity between our workforces. This is largely due to the fact that the VA home is reimbursed at levels that are much beyond that of our rural rate structure. And just as an example, an illustration of a recent event, in 2012, the Veterans Nursing Home in Fergus Falls added a 20-bed addition to their skilled nursing facility, which created new jobs. As a result, both Pioneer and LB Homes suffered as we lost our top talent. And at our exit interviews, wages and benefits were the most frequently cited reasons that employees left their employment for the VA home. Pioneer Care and LB Homes have relatively similar reimbursement in our skilled nursing facilities, and my colleague John will elaborate on that in a moment. But it's not uncommon for us to hear from employees and community members, they inquire as to why these economic inequities exist between our private government facilities that provide virtually the same service and require the same skilled workforce. And frankly, I share in their concerns. What would this rate increase allow Pioneer and LB Homes to do? It would allow us to make necessary adjustments to our employee pay scales in order to be more equitable with the VA home. Most significantly affected areas would be our direct care workforce, our CNAs, our health support specialists, our LPNs, and our RNs. It would also allow us to maintain health benefits and other benefits such as life insurance, 401k, dental, PTO, shift differentials, and other issues related to working conditions. Our workforce is our most valuable asset. Employee wages and compensation related expenses make up nearly 60 to 65% of our operating budget. And as Representative Norris alluded to, I think key to this issue is the existing precedent in our state. To my knowledge, there are five communities in Minnesota with VA nursing homes, and of those five, three of those communities have received similar legislation for the private nursing home entities in those communities, which have to coexist with the VA home in that marketplace. It's been nearly 17 years that this issue has gone unresolved in Fergus Falls, and it should be fixed. In closing, it's truly a privilege to speak about the honorable work of caregiving, and we want to be able to send our caregivers the right message about how important they are in our marketplace and in our community. With the disparities that exist in Fergus Falls because of the issues I've mentioned, it feels like we're sending the wrong message to current and future caregivers who our seniors depend on. The nature of the service we provide in our nursing homes requires our workforce to have equal skill sets, and this deserves equal pay and equal employment opportunity. In our current environment, this is not possible. We need to do our part to lift up the role of the caregiver as an honorable and sought-after profession, and this bill can do that for us by narrowing the disparity in our community's market. So on behalf of Pioneer Care and our dedicated caregivers of Fergus Falls, I thank you for this opportunity to hear our request, and we ask for your support of this critical issue.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is John Zwiers, and I am the administrator of Brown Home in Fergus Falls. I've been an administrator for about 19 years, 12 of that at the Brown Home in Fergus Falls. You have a sheet that we handed out before you, and what this does is it compares some of the wage scales between Brown, Pioneer, and the Veterans Home. Nursing assistants, there is starting is about $1.25 difference, and ending is well over $7 difference in rates. That is hard to compete with. LPNs, our starting is about 75 cents or so higher or less than the Veterans Home. Ending rates are, again, about $6 higher. And then the RNs, the starting is higher than our ending rates. And then they go over $14 an hour higher at the end. So it makes it very difficult to compete for staff. And that's the key to what we do is our staff. The middle part shows the comparisons of the difference in rates. The Veterans Home receives about $5,400 a month for each veteran, where Brown is $3,688 and Pioneer is $3,793. If you would annualize that, that's almost $2 million difference between what the Veterans Home receives and what we receive. The lower part shows what it would cost to, if we were to bring just our nursing salaries up to equivalent of the Veterans Home, along with the FICA, and then give all of our staff the pension that the Veterans Home gets and the health insurance benefits that the Veterans Home gets, it would cost around $1.5 million for us to do that. And this bill would get about $500,000 for Brown Home and about $340,000 for Pioneer. So there's still over $1 million discrepancy even if this bill were passed. So
questions?
Well, Representative Nornes, thank you so much, and I can, I don't know how many communities have veterans home and nursing homes in them with the competition that you've described, but I can say in my own community and talking with our nursing homes, they compete with Mayo Clinic for nurses, and sometimes there's a $20 difference in the pay, and it is a concern for them as well. So I'm very sympathetic personally to, I've heard the stories in my community as well. So hopefully we can address this. And members, are there any other questions anyone has of Representative Nornes or his Representative Fritz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I am very interested in your area and your nursing home and all of the nursing homes because the truth of the matter is that we have not increased the rates. Those folks have not received a salary increase for years. We're 20% behind, and if you have competition like you're having right there, it adds more weight to the issue. So I thank you for bringing this forward. You know, in my greater Minnesota area, a lot of our nurses are moving up towards the cities, working, driving up here to work at Children's and Hennepin and Ramsey and all of the larger hospitals, the RNs especially, making bigger and better wages. So we need, you know, we have a nurse drain is what we have out in greater Minnesota. We'd like to be able to keep our people, but you can't keep them if they don't get paid an adequate salary and benefits. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you for making that point. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Question for Representative Nornes. I look at the fiscal note, and it calls for 2014, the 184 allocation, and then 15 and 16, 274, then an increase for 2017 to 279. Is that a rate increase established by this bill, or isn't it set by the legislature to begin with?
Representative Nornes.
Representative McDonald. I'm not sure that I have an answer for that. Maybe one of these guys would have.
Representative, Madam Chair and Representative, what the fiscal note is the state's portion of the increase. So the increases that I've shown would include the entire increase for the MA side and the private pay. What the fiscal note would be is half of the MA increase. Because the other half is covered by the federal match, so I believe I don't have it right before me, but so the fiscal note is about half of what the MA increase is.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Representative Nornes. We will lay this bill over for possible inclusion unless...
There may be someone who could answer that question better if you have a moment.
I think he's getting the question answered here by our fiscal analyst.
All right. Very good. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. So the bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much for bringing this issue forward.
Thank you very much.
The next bill we'll be hearing is House File 378, Erickson. I'm sorry, 375. I'll move House File 375 to be considered for possible inclusion, passed and considered for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for affording us this time to present our appeal for an operating payment rate increase for a nursing facility in Princeton. We also have a handout available to mark where Princeton is in regard to other nursing facilities, not only in Mille Lacs County, but also in Sherburn County. I have with me, Madam Chair, registered nurse assistant Teresa Gerth and our nursing home director, Todd Lundeen, and I believe Mrs. Gerth will begin to explain.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and committee, I am, as she said, I'm Teresa Gerth, and I am a hands-on caregiver. I went into this profession 32 years ago, and in the last 10 years, my wages have been frozen about 7 times. So in dollars, we're saying that if I didn't waiver the benefits, we're talking that I make $12.28 an hour, which, considering I've been in this profession for 32 years, somehow doesn't really seem fair. But because my heart is toward the elderly and I enjoy the calling that I feel I am to be in, I want to be a voice for the caregivers in Princeton, Minnesota at Elam and Rehab, Care and Rehab Center. And we have had programs that were funded, such as Person First, and we were not able to keep the program going even after the funding was over. And we feel that Person First was a wonderful program, and we had to take away some of the hands-on caregivers that were involved in making it a home setting so that the elderly could be treated as though they were in their own home. We set up kitchen facilities on all the stations and had the residents involved in baking and many of the activities, and we've seen that program fall to the wayside, and we'd like to see it come back, but we realize that there needs to be an addressing of this wage freeze so that we can keep the people like myself that feel it's their calling to be a hands-on caregiver. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony.
My name is Todd Lundeen, and I'm the administrator at Elam in Princeton. Thanks for hearing our cause today. A lot of what we have to say is very similar to what you just heard, and so I'll try to skip the repeat portions because there's others that need to give testimony for their bills as well too today. I'm hoping the handout points out a little bit the problem that there is with reimbursement in our area, because one of our challenges, as Teresa has already said, is that our staff struggle with the wages they're being paid, and we're having a hard time keeping competition with the other facilities that are in our area. Princeton is built, well, was built originally on the southern border of Mille Lacs County. The city itself exists in both Mille Lacs and in Sherburne County. Sherburne County is metro, Stearns County is metro, Benton County is metro. And so 7 blocks south of our facility is where the county line is. Had we been built 8 blocks south, we would have been a metro facility. Our hospital in the community of Princeton is a wonderful hospital. It used to be across the street from us. 10 years ago, moved 8 blocks south, built a brand new hospital just on the east side of 169. You've seen Fairview's beautiful facility out there, and they provide awesome services to the community. But that's part of the reason they built. They were landlocked, and they also needed a metro rate to be able to compete. And that's our challenge as well, too. We lose staff to facilities that are in the area very close by, and you can see the differences in rates. Those differences in rates, I took and put all of our residents that we had in our building last Tuesday in the rates that we were getting and the rates that all the other facilities were getting. So for the exact same residents, Guardian Angels in Elk River is getting $706,000 a year more than we are. Onamia, $1,000,001. Foley, $980,000 a year, and so on. That's the challenge that we have. I have a letter here that I wanted to read too from a gentleman from our community who used to be a senator in Minnesota. His name is Robert Dunn. He writes, Madam Chair, my name is Robert Dunn. I served on the committee of similar jurisdiction as this committee for 3 terms way back in the 1960s, and I certainly understand the problems and concerns with which you are dealing, especially during these times of fiscal shortages and heavy demand for human service support in the state. I wanted to be here today to support Elam Care's proposal to be allowed funding on the basis of metro rather than rural classification. As a citizen of Princeton, I'm impressed with the role Elam plays in our community and know it to be an efficiently operated institution that provides excellent and compassionate care. Unfortunately, I had a conflict, and so I appreciate your willingness to allow this statement to be read. Elam's facility is located about 7 blocks north of the Sherburne County line, and part of the city of Princeton is in Sherburne County. This situation has resulted in Elam's state support being substantially lower than it would have been if it were located just 8 blocks south. In a growing community, which is really almost a suburb, where a large part of our population is employed in the metro area and where we deal with metro issues, it would seem to me that the purpose of House File 375 has merit, I would ask for your favorable consideration. We all know of the issue that we face in Minnesota, where, as Teresa said, wages have been frozen in Minnesota nursing homes 7 of the past 10 years. Part of the challenge I face each day, because I've been at Elam for 25 years as their administrator, is that I have to say, you know, what am I going to do to make life better for the residents and for the staff today, the very staff that our residents depend upon? And one of the things I do every year when I sign for my license to say I'm going to continue to uphold not only the laws of Minnesota, but I'm going to do the best I possibly can to make sure that our residents are safe and well cared for, is I'm personally committing to that. And I ask that you commit and recommit to that as well, too, because it seems like we've kind of lost our moorings here in Minnesota and decided that we're going to somehow balance parts of the budget on the back of the caregivers that provide the care for those residents that desperately need it. There's 37,000 nursing home residents in Minnesota that are in facilities that need our staff's care. So thank you for hearing our case, and I just ask that you'd see it in a favorable light. Do you have any questions?
Thank you so much. I think that was wonderful testimony. You've stated a need we've all recognized for some time. We're certainly hopeful that if the governor chooses and the legislature chooses to support some increase in our budget this year, that this is one of the places that we'll be able to bring some relief and help. So I had one other name on the list. Do we have any other testifiers?
Madam Chair, that was our wheelchair-bound person who came last week.
Okay.
Who just couldn't make the trip again. So James is not with us today, but he observed the meeting last week.
Well, that's great. The testifiers did a wonderful job making their case, so I appreciate that. And if there are any questions? Looks like no questions from the committee. We'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion, and I thank you so much for your testimony today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Next, we have the Office of Legislative Auditor. Oh. Okay, so we have the Office of Legislative Auditor report, medical assistant payment rates for dental services. And we have Jim Nobles and Valerie Bombach and perhaps Scott Lights as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Jim Nobles, Legislative Auditor.
Welcome.
And while Ms. Bombach gets ready to make the presentation, let me just make a very brief opening remarks. We bring to you, too, an issue that is of longstanding, as the presenters just that preceded us gave you also, I think, as you acknowledge, Madam Chair. And this issue is that dentists have for many years complained that the payments that they receive to provide services under medical assistance are too low. In fact, in some cases, they claim that the payment that they receive doesn't even cover their costs. Also, dentists, I think, particularly in recent times, have complained specifically about the low payments they receive when they provide services and seek payment through Minnesota's managed care organizations. And I think all of us are aware that that complaint has grown and strengthened in recent months as we see managed care organizations being particularly profitable. And I think the third complaint that you have certainly heard and was part of the reason we were asked to do this evaluation is that the Minnesota Medical Assistance Program and anybody that participates in it creates a good deal of complexity. The rate setting process and seeking payment requires a good deal of complexity, and frankly, for some people, that complexity has generated not only a good deal of frustration and added cost, but some sense of suspicion and even some distrust of what the rate setting process is all about and why dentists are not being better treated in that program. So I think the report, the evaluation that we conducted, confirms that Minnesota's approach to rate setting and purchasing dental services under the medical assistance program is flawed and is in need of significant reform. As we say on the first page of our report, Minnesota's payment policies and methods for reimbursing dental providers are poorly coordinated and inconsistently applied across the state's medical assistance program. So I think as we acknowledge that and move forward with some reforms, we should be aiming for greater transparency and accountability in the rate setting process, We should especially seek more information about the actual impact of state policies and procedures on service providers and seek to be more fair with all service providers, and where we can, certainly seek greater simplicity. Achieving these goals will require close collaboration between the legislature and the Department of Human Services. The results, we hope, will not only restore a measure of trust with our dental providers across the state, but also help Minnesota become a smarter purchaser of services. And so with that, Madam Chair, we would like to make a brief presentation of our report, and I would like to turn it over to Ms. Bombach. Thank you again so much for making time in your schedule.
Thank you. We really appreciate this.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Valerie Bombach, the project manager for this evaluation, and I'd also like to acknowledge Kate Yang in the audience, who also worked on this project. Mr. Nobles described the issues that prompted this evaluation, and we looked into these issues and we reached several broad conclusions. First, Minnesota's payment rates for medical assistance dental services are often insufficient, and they do not reflect today's cost to provide dental care. The rate setting and payment processes are complicated by Minnesota's use of multiple payment methods. Finally, we think that Minnesota's rates and payment practices likely have had opposing and negative outcomes on dentist participation and MA recipient access to dental services. For some background information, I'll just walk through a few items here. For the Medical Assistance Program, or MA, Minnesota provides more dental benefits than required by federal law. We estimated that in 2011, MA dental expenditures totaled about $131 million. Dental services represents a relatively small share of overall MA costs. That is about 3% when looking only at basic health care services and not including long-term care services. Dental spending per member month increased about 2% annually between 2006 and 2011. And then, like other MA healthcare services, dental providers participate and are reimbursed either through the Department of Human Services, through managed care organizations, or both, depending on which programs they enroll in. Earlier, we mentioned that Minnesota uses different types of payments to reimburse dental providers. Determining how much to pay for dental services is complex, and it's further complicated because Minnesota uses different methods for different types of payments. The payment rate structure for medical assistance is typically referred to as the fee-for-service base rates. States are allowed flexibility in how they set these fee-for-service base rates, as well as the other types of payments. And then the legislature approves the rate-setting methodology. However, federal law imposes some rate-setting requirements on states, where the law actually creates a relationship between the rate amount and recipient access to services. Specifically, payments must be set to assure that they are sufficient to enlist enough providers so that care and services are available, at least to the extent that care and services are available to the general population.
Could I ask a question there?
Yes.
Just on that last point, if federal law requires this and we have not been doing it, do they not take action? Have they not noticed? Have we not told them?
Well, I'll give an example. In 2011, the rates were reduced by 3%. And when the Department of Human Services submitted the state plan to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they did express concern about the rate reduction, the 3% reduction, and the impact on access that it would have on MA recipients. And they asked the department to monitor specific factors, for example, utilization rates. They also asked for more data regarding, I believe it was historical information, as well as collecting information moving forward. So that's the most recent example of what the federal government, how the federal government has responded. You know, I will note that they did approve the rates. They did approve the rate reduction.
And that's interesting because in southern Minnesota, at least, I know of two clinics that shut down completely as a result of that drop in payment, and yet, you know, we weren't cited and it was accepted and we move along. So I appreciate you, you know, bringing to light what I think many of us knew was happening. But I guess I'm a little surprised that the federal government has a rule that tells us we need to have you know, sufficient reimbursement to serve clients, and then really hasn't held our feet to the fire for that to date.
Yes, Madam Chair, and I'd actually like to point out a distinction here, because in the medical assistance program, there is that relationship between the rates and access to services. However, in the Medicare program, the way the rates are set, it's tied to the cost to provide services. So there is a distinction there.
Thank you.
So talking a little, just briefly covering what is a payment for dental services, most procedures are paid a set amount on a per procedure basis. Fee-for-service rates are the same statewide. Payment rates for some children's procedures are different than payments for services provided to adults. And finally, we pay the same rates for serving non-pregnant adults as for treating adults with special needs. So the rate structure is comparable for those populations. Minnesota reimburses providers through two main types of payments. First, dental providers are paid the fee-for-service base rates. The rate-setting method for dental procedures is prescribed in state law, and it's generally based on the median of 1989 charges of dentists in the region. The other primary source of reimbursement is through managed care programs. The managed care organizations negotiate their own rates with providers. Generally, they start at the fee-for-service rate, but they may pay more. And then the state also uses other supplemental payments that are targeted to certain providers or clinics. And most of these payments require that the provider serve low-income populations. And the slide highlights the three main types of payments that Minnesota uses for dental services. Some other payments are cost-based, for example, for state-operated services, dental clinics, and some other clinics. The payment is a per-procedure amount plus a settle-up amount to cover all of their administrative costs. We have several conclusions about Minnesota's payment rates and the rate-setting methods. First, we think that Minnesota's fee-for-service base rates for dental services are low. Most rates are lower today than they were in the year 2000. Historically, they've also been lower compared with most states, including our neighboring states. Second, our main finding is that Minnesota's multiple payment policies are poorly coordinated and inconsistently applied across programs. And I'll just give an example. So through fee-for-service, the Department of Human Services pays community clinics an additional 20% above the fee-for-service rates. They also pay all dental providers an additional 2% of the fee-for-service rates, and this is for reimbursement of Minnesota's tax on providers. However, the department's contracts with the managed care organizations do not require them to make comparable payments. So that's the example that we lay out where the payment policies are inconsistently applied. Finally, one consequence of relying on multiple types of payments is that it's hard to determine whether payments supplement or actually supplant rates that would otherwise be negotiated between the managed care organizations and their providers. Next, I'll turn from rate setting and methods to talk about payment amounts. That is, we looked at how much dentists are actually paid. First, fee-for-service payments, that is the payments that are based on the fee-for-service base rates, on average cover about one-third of dentist charges. A relatively small share and number of dentists are eligible for larger supplemental payments, like the critical access payments and the community clinic payments. And we estimated that only about 18% of participating dentists are eligible for these larger payments. Among these dentists that are receiving supplemental payments, their payments in aggregate cover a little bit more, about one half of their charges. There have been frequent changes in critical access eligibility and payment amounts. Specifically, there have been 5 different rate factors since 2002, and at one point payments were stopped. Finally, there are no separate rates or payments for adults with special needs who often require additional care. For example, dentists are not compensated for their travel to facilities to treat these patients. Earlier, we noted that payments through managed care organizations are set through negotiated agreements between the organizations and their providers. We found that managed care organizations, on average, paid more than the fee-for-service base rates. For example, for the PMAP program, the average median payment for a large, this is for a large sample of procedures, was about 120% of the fee-for-service rate. Again, this is a median, which means that there are payments that are higher and there are also payments that are lower. However, we also found that more than one half of dentists were paid at or near the fee-for-service rate for at least one MA patient. That is, it's the typical rate that's paid through fee-for-service. And again, these fee-for-service rates have not increased in over a decade. Coming back to our main research questions, that is, what is the impact of the payment rates on dentist participation and enrollee access? And we found that dentist participation rates have been fairly constant. About two-thirds of licensed dentists served at least one MA recipient in recent years, and this is partly due to newly licensed dentists enrolling in MA. However, about one-fourth of our survey respondents said that they did not serve any MA patients after 2010. We also found that the number and share of dentists with large MA caseloads, large MA patient caseloads, increased in recent years. Most, but not all, of these dentists with large caseloads received the larger supplemental payments. We asked dentists what factors affect their participation in the program. The most common reason among our survey respondents was that they were low payments or insufficient payments. And I've also highlighted a few other reasons. For example, administrative work required to participate in the program and patients' failure to appear for appointment were also frequently cited. Looking at recipient access to MA dental services, we found that adult MA recipients had lower utilization rates than rates for the general population. And a utilization rate is the rate in which an eligible recipient received at least some dental services in a given year. We also think that some MA populations may face challenges accessing dental care in Minnesota. In particular, the fee-for-service enrollees with special needs, elderly, young children, and individuals in sparsely populated areas. We have, overall, we have several broad conclusions. First, it's difficult to precisely measure the impact of payment rates on access. This is partly due to the state's use of multiple methods of payments, as well as other factors, such as workforce shortages. Having said this, we found that higher reimbursement rates for dentists have sometimes facilitated patient access. But we also found that Minnesota's array of payment policies and rate-setting practices for dental services likely has had opposing and negative outcomes for the state and its MA recipients. We asked dentists for their opinions on how the state should approach reimbursing them for dental services. And dentists overall agreed that the state should increase the fee-for-service base rates. However, as you can see from the slide in your handout, dentists were in less agreement over the use of targeted approaches for paying dental providers or clinics that meet certain eligibility criteria. For example, there's some disagreement as to whether or not a dental provider should get paid more if they work in underserved areas. We have several recommendations for the legislature and the Department of Human Services. First, we think that the legislature and DHS should better coordinate payment policies and rate setting for MA dental services. The state uses numerous approaches to paying for providers, and the rate amounts are not based on a systematic assessment to set rates that meet federal standards for access. As part of this effort, we think that the legislature should, in fact, increase the fee-for-service base rates for dental services. We don't specify how much they should be increased, but we do emphasize that any increase should be coordinated with other payments and payment policies, particularly any increases in payments that may go to the managed care organizations. We also recommend that the legislature and DHS implement a separate benefit and payment structure for the MA population with special needs. This effort should include coverage and payments that recognize the additional care that some of these individuals may require. We also think that the Department of Human Services should more closely monitor MA recipients' access to dental services. DHS should improve its information system, it's called Minutes, to better support dental providers' inquiries of patient eligibility as well as state restrictions on benefits. The department also should ensure that service authorization criteria and benefit changes are more clearly defined and communicated to dental providers. That concludes my presentation, Madam Chair, and we'd be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Madam Chair, could I just comment, go back to your point about the federal government and the federal government's response to our system? This is a small slice of the MA rate setting and payment process. As I think we all know, Minnesota's rate setting process is under significant scrutiny more broadly. In fact, we do have currently federal investigators and auditors in Minnesota examining Minnesota's rate-setting process for MA. And we recently, I think most of you are aware, had an internal consultant report from DHS about the rate-setting process, the so-called Siegel Report. In addition, some of you are aware that last year the Legislative Auditor's Office was mandated to do a review of rate setting at the Department of Human Services, and we intend to begin that process later in the year. So, indeed, Madam Chair, unfortunately, I guess I have to say, we have been drawing a great deal of attention both from Congress and the executive branch of the federal government, and has put our MA rate setting process under a great deal of scrutiny. So, they are here and they are looking at us.
Thank you very much, and after everyone's asked their questions, I have two bills that will, I hope, move us in the right direction, at least on this particular issue. Does anyone have any questions for either of our testifiers? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Mr. Nobles, in the federal portion where children are getting dental assistance, I see that they're allowed to have their cleaning or twice a year, is that correct? Or not only the cleaning, but also the, the procedure that they put over their teeth. My son just had it. Name's escaped me.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I believe they're the sealants.
Sealant, thank you. It escaped me. So just wondering.
Not a dentist.
Yeah, thank you. We allow that, twice a year, I think, for the children, for the cleaning and the sealant, once for the sealant. How often are those children getting that procedure?
Ms. Bombeck.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I can't speak to the precise number of children that are getting that procedure. If you are asking about the utilization rates for how often children, medical assistance children, are actually receiving services, generally the data that we looked at showed that MA recipient children had fewer visits to the dentist than children that are insured, I should say.
Representative McDonald, are you asking for, do they qualify for two cleanings a year, or do they get two cleanings a year?
Madam Chairman, no, it was the utilization rate and the qualifying, so I think she answered that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you to all three of you, looks like. In the back there, too. So thank you so much. And Commissioner Leitz, you didn't have any comments?
Just brief one.
Okay. Assistant Commissioner Scott Leitz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Leitz. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Healthcare at DHS. I just want to make a few brief remarks. I want to thank the Legislative Auditor's Office and Mr. Nobles and Ms. Bombeck for taking on this. It is a challenging and complex topic, and Orally did its usual thorough and balanced review of the issue, and I think did a really excellent job with this report. You know, oral health is a pretty critical part of the overall health of our Medicaid clients, and We at DHS do appreciate the work that the dental community in Minnesota does. I think the report pointed out a number of areas where, frankly, we make it difficult for dental practitioners to really do the work that they do. And so we appreciate the fact that I think the report points out that there's been pretty stable participation in our programs in spite of those challenges. I think that says a lot about the commitment of dentists in Minnesota and the work that they do. The Dayton administration has really placed a strong emphasis on improving our relationships with the dental community, and I think that's a commitment that we have and we will keep. We have had some good initial discussions with them. I think we're moving down the track well with that community, but I think more work needs to be done. We welcomed this review. We think it's a very good roadmap. We support the key recommendations of the report and look forward to using the report as we work on improving the way that we administer the dental benefit under the Medicaid program. We do understand that the rate structure, as it's evolved over time, has changed a lot. It's changed frequently, and it's not very. There's not a lot of clarity to it. And I think that's an area that we look forward to working with folks in the dental community to in the legislature to make it a much clearer, more understandable, and fairer rate structure. We do. I would just add in closing, Madam Chair, that we, in recognition at least of the challenges that we face in terms of the payment rates that we have, we did include in Governor Dayton's budget an increase for dental services, both on the fee for service side as well as for benefits that are administered through managed care plans. It's a 5% rate increase over current rates. We recognize that that's a start. It's probably not sufficient to fully address all the issues that are here, but we think it's at least an important step to take to begin to address the issues. So thank you, Madam Chair, for the time to respond to the report.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Leitz, and perhaps you'll stay and hear my solution. Maybe you'd be happy to support that. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Representative Quam, would you like to take the chair? This next bill actually is one from our community, and we'll have him chair.
Representative Norton, you have a motion to your bill.
Would you like me to move my bill? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, Representative Norton.
I would very enthusiastically move House File 408 for your consideration and laying it over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative. Did you have an amendment to get into a form you'd prefer?
We're going to, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'd like to withdraw that motion. We're going to do House File 176 first. So I apologize. That was my error. So I would withdraw that motion and now move House File 176 to be passed and laid over for possible inclusion, and I would move that amendment, the A1.
Thank you. Is there any comments or discussion on that amendment or clarification? Representative Norton, did you want to describe your amendment, or should we just go to questions and adoption?
I think I don't have a copy of the amendment, so if I could get a copy of it first, thank you. Thank you. Yes, that does exactly what I'd want. thank you, Mr. Chair. And last time we had this heard in Health and Human Service Policy, the issue was raised that it was limiting it to dentists and that hygienists perhaps could provide some of these services, so we've changed the language to meet their approval and include them in the bill. So that's what the amendment does.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Amendment passes.
Representative Norton, please continue.
Thank you very much. Members, as you just heard through the OLA report, that we have not treated our folks fairly on MA, and in particular our those of our citizens that have developmental disabilities. And this bill is hoping to fix that. A number of years ago, we actually cut some of the reimbursement codes for persons with disabilities, and those include house calls to extended care facilities for treatment by a dentist, behavioral management, which is a little bit, about 15 minutes of additional staff time. We cut oral or IV conscious sedation that's needed by some of our citizens with severe disabilities. And we limited prophylaxis to one times per year, and some of our patients with disabilities, in order to get their entire mouth cleaned, it takes more than one visit per year. And some of those folks also have very severe dental issues because they can't manage their own health care. They have to rely on others, and so additional cleanings are also necessary for that as well. We have a unique program down in Rochester that kind of raised this issue to all of our awareness, and we have an excellent program where we have Apple Tree Dental goes into our ICFMRs and actually provides care right on site. Our developmentally disabled have care right there. They're comfortable. It's their home. It's with help from people that they know, and it's been very beneficial. But that program, it was a special program we worked on in our own community. Once that was put in place, these codes really impacted the ability for that program to continue, as well as just services across the state for anyone with disability. So this isn't limited to that program, but that's how we learned about it. So with that, I'm hoping we can make this change. You've received the fiscal note, and I was pleased to see that it wasn't as bad as I thought it might be, and I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to find some money in the budget this year to care for the folks in our communities and your communities that need these services. So with that, I have two testifiers, actually. One that called me out of the blue, and I'm thrilled that she's here. And Apple Tree Dental, Dr. Mike Helgeson, or Mr. Mike Helgeson, I'm not sure Dr. Mike.
Dr. Helgeson?
Here to testify.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am Dr. Michael Helgeson.
I'm the minister. I didn't know if you were still practicing.
I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Apple Tree Dental. Apple Tree is a nonprofit critical access dental provider. Our hub and spoke delivery system served 29 counties in Minnesota. Since 1986, we've delivered almost 1 million dental services or dental visits, and we've been nationally recognized for our services to group home residents as well as to long-term care facility residents. And as was mentioned, this bill restores essential services for the disabled that were in place all the way up until 2010. Disabled adults are the most medically complex and behaviorally challenged adults who are enrolled in the medical assistance program. And unlike other adults in the program, most of this targeted population group will depend on medical assistance for the rest of their lives. And so ignoring prevention and having it not be possible to provide the right service at the right time actually increases the costs, increases the harm to the patient over time. Disabled adults also face the greatest barriers to accessing care, traveling to dentists, medical transportation, and the like. And they suffer grave consequences to their total health when infections in their mouth spread, either aspiration pneumonia in long-term care patients or infections that may bring them to the emergency department or to the operating room. So it was mentioned briefly there are four key services, house calls. And we have provided a handout which provides a lot of details and facts and figures about the benefits of house calls in terms of delivering better care, producing better health outcomes, and reducing the total cost of care. And you do have some written testimony from Cindy Ostrowski, the administrator of Hiawatha Homes, that was submitted today. I'm just going to highlight a couple of things from her testimony. First, that it costs the state $216 per round trip just for the medical transportation to transport the Hiawatha home residents to the only place able to provide their services. That's compared to about $25 for the cost of the house call. So frankly, I believe it's a no-brainer that restoring this service is actually saving costs, not only in the future, but right now. It's just a smarter way to deliver the services that are required. The second is behavior management. This reimburses extra treatment time and behavioral techniques and so on to be able to accommodate patients with a variety of different disorders that make it difficult for them to cooperate for a successful dental visit. The third service is oral or IV sedation. Frankly, the days of physical restraint are over. It's kind of unconscionable. We're in a phase where providing this service allows patients with disabilities to undergo necessary care. In the absence of that, their only choice is a $10,000 to $20,000 hospitalization for general anesthesia, which is many, many fold more costly than providing the right service at the right time. The final benefits are what we call risk-based and evidence-based prevention. If you think for just a moment, if a medically complex disabled adult who's unable to carry out their own daily care on a daily basis isn't at high risk for dental disease, who is? So this notion, and again from Cindy Ostrowski's testimony, of the 47 disabled people they have, 41 need total support on a daily basis for their brushing and their daily mouth care. 6 need physical support. None are independent in that function. So all of them need more frequent professional cleaning than simply once a year. I think the evidence is really clear that more frequent cleanings do prevent the spread of infection in high-risk adults. So just in closing, these services clearly meet the healthcare reform's triple aim. They're essential for personal hygiene, for health maintenance, and frankly, for dignity. And I just want to call out again that legislative auditor's report specifically recommends the development of focused benefits for people with special needs. And this bill is one small step back in the right direction to make that happen. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and I would welcome any questions.
Thank you, Doctor. The chair preferred that your next testifier come down and testify. Doctor, stay seated there so that after your next testifier, we'll look for questions from the committee. And then after that, we will solicit anyone in the audience that wishes to testify. Representative Norton, if you could introduce your testifier.
Rachel Renneke called the other day and asked to testify, and she has some information she'd like to share that I think will be beneficial.
Ms. Renneke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I am an advocate for my younger brother who has severe medical, physical, and cognitive disabilities. I'm also a special education teacher, so I advocate for all the children and families I work with throughout my career. Individuals like my brother will not open their mouths because of the sensory integration difficulties they have. He needs to have sedation. We have to play many, many tricks just at home to get him to open his mouth to us to brush his teeth. And when you go into a dentist office where it isn't a daily familiar person asking him to open his mouth, that's not going to happen without sedation. Because he requires a pureed diet, he does not have the oral motor control to chew food. That pureed food is on his teeth. It doesn't get swallowed like regular food. And because he doesn't allow us to fully and adequately brush his teeth and clean his mouth, that's even more reason he should get more than one time a year for prophylactic cleanings. Also, many medications that he is on and other individuals are on cause him to have dry mouth or over-salivation, which also causes gingivitis and gum decay and things like that. Many individuals are physically not able to clean their teeth, and because of PCAs not being paid what they need to be paid, they are not there at nighttime or morning time a lot of times to do that and help individuals with those cares. If he cannot be under conscious sedation and requires full general anesthetics, and that usually requires a night in the hospital, his PCA is not allowed to be there and help him through that. So all of these difficulties only increase his social-emotional fears in going to the dentist or any regular dentist appointment just for a checkup or cleaning, which makes it even more difficult the next time to open his mouth and allow for proper care. So many individuals need more than just the one time per year for health. We don't feel that dental health should be separate from regular medical physical health needs. And a lot of times For individuals that are nonverbal, it's really important if they start having more behaviors, they start having fevers, we do get in and get their teeth checked to see if there is a dental infection or an abscess or an impact tooth. And again, if that requires sedation, we need to have that covered and part of what they're allowed to get. So I thank you for your time and listening to my testimony.
Well, thank you, testifiers. Are there any questions from the committee? Is there anyone from the audience that would like to come down and testify? Please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Joe Lally. I'm Vice President at Delta Dental. Delta Dental is the largest administrator of public programs as a subcontractor to four of the nine health plans that in the managed care portion of the public programs. We support the expansion of benefits for disabled persons on public programs. We're grateful for Representative Norton's leadership on this. We have one administrative kind of difficulty, a practical difficulty. So we don't oppose the policy. We don't oppose the expansion. We have a practical difficulty of identifying in our record set who's disabled and who's not disabled, because there are disabled persons throughout the different, several different public programs that that we administer. But we're working with the Department of Human Services and with other stakeholders in terms of how we best overcome that administrative or practical difficulty, and we hope to come to some resolution of that. But we support the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lally. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question for the author. You know, we heard from Apple Tree Dental and the numbers in terms of how much money is saved by doing in-home care versus mm-hmm. transporting. How many providers are there like that? Is Apple Tree the only one? Are there multiples across the state? I don't know how many providers even provide that type of in-home service for disabled populations.
I think Dr. Helgeson's going to come down and he might have a little bit more information.
Yes, there are, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there are other organizations that do provide on-site care. There are a number of dentists that have collaborative hygienists that work on their team and go out and provide on-site services, including prevention services. And the house call is really the only one that specifically links to providing the on-site services. The other services are provided by all, you know, many dentists in many settings throughout the state. So I wish there were more providing on-site care, and frankly, the absence of any reimbursement for our staff and truckers and equipment is a huge barrier. It costs Apple Tree every year about $750,000 for our trucks and our mileage, our truckers, the people delivering, and then mileage reimbursements for staff who sometimes drive great distances to get to the various sites in the community. So it's a necessary service, and I think actually moving this bill forward will encourage more people to provide that same type of service.
No follow-up? No. Any Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is definitely a commonly known that by having good dental care for this group of folks is a cost savings to the state in future medical expenses. Should this bill pass, is there a way that we can track this so years to come we can continue the program or add to it if necessary? Can we track that data, and do we have any data to substantiate that which I spoke of?
Representative Norton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to just clarify that this bill is open to everyone. The fiscal note is open to everyone, so I think some of the concerns shared by Delta Dental have been addressed in this bill. So I think he'll nod his head in acknowledgement, so I just wanted to make sure you knew that. Secondly, I mean, the auditor's report was a start for us. It showed us that we have been neglecting this population. We should already have some numbers in place because we provided these services. We cut these services several years ago. Hopefully, I guess my hope is that because we're implementing this, we won't have the long-term impact. We won't be able to to demonstrate that. But I do think the department does collect some information, and perhaps that's something we can explore further about asking them. This particular bill does not ask them to collect specific data, but I think they do, to some extent, collect some. And I don't know, Dr. Helgeson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to add that there is a lot of research data, both in the United States and internationally, where formal studies have been done looking at the cost savings. For example, studies looking at nursing facility residents and reduced rates of aspiration pneumonia, significantly reduced rates of admission for that. And that's one of the leading causes of death, frankly, of older adults. So a number of studies in Japan and Scandinavia that demonstrate that quite clearly, and other studies. So while we don't really have a good system for tracking that presently, and I think the OLA report, another theme of that is that we have so many layers of administration and a total lack of integration of information between those systems, where, for example, the dental administrators have no idea even who's disabled or what the medical status of these people are. So we really do need to transform the administration as well.
I was wondering if Assistant Commissioner Leitz had any comments. Leitz had any comments on this? Not required by... We're checking for possible additional insight. Did you have a follow-up, Representative McDonald?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did. Thank you. Representative Norton, then, do you think it would be prudent, perhaps, to put in the bill that we follow this so future legislators and legislatures can have the data so this program will be able to continue on, even in budget-tight areas? I know that in years past with deficits, this the dental... That whole area seems to be neglected, as we know, is evident by Mr. Nobles' test audit. So I would think, personally, that having perhaps, you would hope that common sense would prevail and we track it without having to have a bill or, an add-on, an amendment, but what say you?
Representative McDonald, I would welcome an amendment when we do markup on this bill. If you would like to forward an amendment for study, there is a cost for studies, you can maybe think about that between now and the markup of the bill and when we bring it forward, because this will be laid over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. I wouldn't fight you on it, but right now I just need to, for the little bit of money that we might find, I need it to go to the disabled community rather than a study. But I do appreciate and agree with your concerns.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, Representative Norton, would you like to take up your amendment? Your motion?
Mr. Chair, I would just hope that the committee will lay this over for possible inclusion and seriously consider funding this in the omnibus bill.
Well, thank you. It is laid over.
Thank you.
Now, Representative Norton, you have an additional bill. If you have got any testifiers, if they could approach the table.
I do. And maybe we can get this done in the time allotted. And, Mr. Chair, I apologize for having tried moving this one ahead. But this is House File 408, and I would, if you're willing, I would lay it over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Would you like to begin with a description or introduce one of your testifiers?
I'm going to make just a few comments, and then we'll have the testifiers talk, and I think we can get done in time. Mr. Chair, this is in response to the concerns I've been hearing from dentists across the state for a long time and concerns I've had with in southern Minnesota where patients on medical assistance are unable to find dentists to serve their care. And we're going to have testimony today from one of those past providers who no longer is offering that service to MA, and he can tell you why, MA patients. We need to ensure an adequate system of providers across the state for our patients on MA. We've tried a variety of things in the past. I think the OLA report shows that it's complicated and it's been unsuccessful. We are, as was testified on just a few moments ago by the OLA report, basing our reimbursement rates on 1989 dollars. It's completely unacceptable. Minnesota is 43rd nationally in dental fee reimbursements. And this fee structure does not even reimburse the dentist for the cost of care. They lose money on every MA patient that they see. And it's just completely unacceptable. People are using, on MA, are using emergency rooms for care, cannot find dentists in their area, having to drive hours if you live in outstate Minnesota to find a dentist that takes MA. We have a solution. It's mold, and we know that. It goes above and beyond Commissioner Light's 5% increase, but we need you to understand what dentists should be paid as you start thinking about what we're willing to support in this state in the omnibus bill and whether we want to accept the commissioner's 5% or whether we really need to do something better and bolder. So the solution that we've come up with is a reimbursement at 75% of the 2011 rates. And so that's what this bill is asking for. And I will just close by saying, you know, charity care is not a health system. I read that from a statement that the good Dr. Flynn wrote in an article recently, and I completely agree. We've been relying on charity care to serve disabled when we have time to do it, and it's just simply not good enough. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have my testifiers speak to you.
One moment before Dr. Flynn starts. I do have to do a correction. House File 176 is laid over as amended. And now, Dr. Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. As you know, I'm Dr. Michael Flynn. I happen to be the president of the Minnesota Dental Association this year. But more importantly, I am one of those two clinics that Representative Norton said closed because of lack of funding. That is why I'm here. And the reason we closed is we just couldn't continue to operate, in my case, up to 65% of my patients on Minnesota state programs. It was heartbreaking to find those patients without a home. But one of the hardest things I ever did in my life was tell my employees of long term they no longer had a job. It was a very heartbreaking moment because they cared and treated these people during my career of 34 years. It's a long time. Now I work as an associate, and I work in a clinic at Lewiston, Minnesota. So with that said, I would like to appreciate the efforts of the legislative auditor. I concur. I can't believe how accurate the legislative auditor reported the actual total chaos and dysfunction of our dental system as we see it. They're very accurate. I commend them for it. I applaud their work. And they have kudos. Our amendment could be page 66 of their report, our bill. With that said, they've done an outstanding job on that report. I have it here, and couldn't agree with it more. As said earlier in the testimony, Minnesota has taken the responsibility to treat people in dental care for their overall health. We've fallen down. We've not done that. The state has really let down these patients. The patients are in desperate need of care. And I'd like to highlight three points to the legislature about these plans and what we can do for a solution. First of all, as the state auditor reported, our system's broken today. It's just not working. The patients aren't able to navigate it well. The dental community, I feel, is trying very hard, but when you're working with a 1989 fee base, which is, it's hard to remember how many decades ago that was. In fact, it's hard to remember how many decades ago that was. In fact, I have a young aspiring doctor here who took his boards last week.
That's right.
Yeah. Aaron, what were you, four?
4 years old.
4 years old. We're going off of rates that were based when Aaron was 4 years old. I just can't believe it. So we need to really look at that. To further that, I like to use an experience. Yesterday at 4 o'clock, I had a mother call about her young son had a toothache. And I said, well, I do work at another clinic now. Our policy is we're not seeing any more new Minnesota healthcare patients. Well, long story short, she called back again. Was fairly tearful. And I've got a soft heart. So at 4 o'clock, on my birthday, I said, bring the young man in. He's 13 years old, and he'd already been to the ER 3 weeks prior to seeing me yesterday. And I'm sorry to say, he had abscess too. And long term, I took care of the pain, we've taken care of the infection, but the long term, he's going to lose that tooth most likely. He's 13 years old, now he's going to be scarred forever,
really.
And we could have taken care of that with earlier treatment with a simple filling, but our network isn't there. His name is Austin, and I'll just use that. That's a figure of speech because I just want to talk about Austin's problem finding access. I see that every day. Austin's family and mother, I used to see in my clinic that is now closed in Winona. Austin's one of 3,000 patients that I used to see in my clinic. He needed care. How many other ones need care? How many other ones from just my practice need care and can't find it? So I'm just trying to impress upon you how important it is to make a major change, because Austin went to the emergency room a couple weeks prior, and as our Minnesota Department of Health, I'll put out a report in February, over a three-year period, we spent $148 million on non-traumatic dental pain. Dental pain currently is the number one reason people end up in the emergency room. That tells me we really need to open our eyes and look at this problem. Representative Norton's bill, 408, addresses this in a complete way. It addresses, I think, every point in the legislative auditor's report. It's going to add parity to the system. It's going to add professionals in a network throughout the state so that these people are treated in a more timely fashion. And it's going to fulfill our obligation to the federal government to deliver these programs that we're promising that we're delivering. It's an obligation. It's the right thing to do. I think our bill has some cost impact to it. There is a fiscal note. However, the fiscal note, in my mind, just shows how broken the system is. We have to figure out how to figure out that fiscal note. This bill will fix the dental access problem, restore parity and fees across the state as addressed by the Office of Legislative Auditors. Because we're on a very tight time schedule, I believe, I will conclude there, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Doctor. Representative Norton, your next testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Aaron Booman. I'm a fourth-year dental student at the University of Minnesota, and I would like to thank you and the members of the committee for the opportunity to be here today. I'm speaking on behalf of the students of dentistry at the University of Minnesota, the young providers of this state, and most importantly, the people of Minnesota. As a safety net clinic at the University of Minnesota, the majority of the patients that I've had the opportunity to see for the last 2 years have been on some form of public program. There is a challenge to this, of course, as we've heard throughout the testimony today, but many of us have grown to love the patients that we have seen for the past few years, and we really desire to keep treating that patient population. However, life inside the dental school is not reality outside of the walls of Moose Tower. The patients that we love, respect, and serve are most often not seen in the practices that I and my classmates will soon be joining. The average, and there's reasons for that, and I think the biggest reason for that is this, is that the average student debt load, according to the American Student Dental Association, is $230,000 at public schools. I myself have over $300,000 invested in my education, and I am personally invested in that cost. I have taken the responsibility to myself to pay for it. I mean, I have, and I will gladly do that to be able to be a part of the profession that I love and treat the patients that I want to treat. However, there is difficulty in making that treatment possible. And what I would like to ask today is that the state of Minnesota do the same thing. and take the responsibility to commit to the investment to the people of Minnesota. We just heard the numbers from Dr. Flynn, and I'm here to bring another hard reality. If the funding for dental in Minnesota remains unchanged, there's no way that myself or my classmates with our debt load will be able to pay, will be able to treat MA patients and subsequently operate our clinics at a loss. Over the past few days, when I've told my friends that I'll be here testifying, I've had at least 10 of my classmates say how excited they would be to treat publicly funded patients in their program or in their clinics and at their programs. But in the current climate, they will be unable to. With the majority of MA care being delivered by dentists that are at or around 55 years old, such as Dr. Flynn, then what will happen to these patients when these providers retire or are forced out of their clinics due to cost? Please help the state of, please help the people of Minnesota fix the system so that we're able, as young providers, to provide the care that we are so desperate to provide.
Thank you, Mr. Bowman. Ms. Russell, would you state your name and association for the record?
Yes, my name is Lori Russell. I'm the practice administrator for Metropolitan Pediatric Dental. And Mr. Chair and members, on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Pediatric Dentists, I would like to thank you and your committee for your hard work, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak. I do have a letter here from Dr. James Nickman, who's the president of our corporation, that I would like to have passed out if I could. My practice, Metropolitan Pediatric Dental, employs 9 pediatric dentists. We have 4 locations in the metropolitan area. Our mission, since 1965, is to provide quality dental care to all children, regardless of their religion, financial, or physical disability. Our patients mainly come from the 5-county metropolitan area and consists of many diverse populations. But we also draw patients from outstate areas such as Duluth, Malacca, Hinckley, and Faribault, patients seeking help from a pediatric dentist to treat their children. Dental decay is the most common chronic childhood disease found in children in the United States today, 5 times more common than asthma. It remains a hidden crisis to some extent because children from low-income families experience a high disease burden. 80% of all dental problems in children are found from those in lower-income groups. The Minnesota Department of Health recently reported that 55% of third graders in Minnesota have dental cavities. In 2012, Metropolitan Pediatric Dental treated 15,322 publicly funded patients with 52,966 encounters. We have managed to continue to treat these children by using the money we make from our private patients to offset the losses that we encounter. Unfortunately, with increasing costs, the state of the economy, struggles with our private families, and the loss of critical access payments, the model no longer works. We have tried to bridge the gap by not providing salary increases for 4 years and cutting benefits and expenses, but the toll on the practice and our employees is too costly. With that in mind, we have unfortunately come to the conclusion that we alone cannot carry the weight of the world and feel responsible for working within a broken system. Assuming nothing changes, we are being forced to reduce the amount of patients that have publicly funded insurance. This may include closing our St. Paul location that 80% of its patients are covered by medical assistance programs. As a primary care provider that takes referrals from federally qualified healthcare clinics and general dentists that are unable to treat our youngest children, we are not sure where these children will find a stable, competent dental home. Our patients do not choose which households they are born into or what physical, developmental, or psychological conditions they are born with. Please help us help our children.
Thank you, Ms. Russell. Next testifier, doctor, please state your name and association for the record.
My name is Dr. John Goulon. I am a dentist and president of Park Dental. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you on this important issue, House File number 408. Park Dental is a private dental group practice that has operated in the Twin Cities metropolitan area for over 40 years We have 25 practice locations throughout the Twin Cities metropolitan area. We're consisting of 92 general dentists, 60 of whom are partners and owners of the group. Park Dental is not a nonprofit dental group. We do not receive critical access reimbursement payments or any other special state payments. At Park Dental, we do see patients with medical assistance at all of our practices. And unlike many dental practices in Minnesota, we have always been a provider for patients with public assistance. We believe it to be our moral and professional responsibilities as members of our communities. In recent years, 2011 and 2012, we had about 18,000 public assistant patient visits at Park Dental, and in both of those years had net operating losses, providing that care of over $1 million. Park Dental would like to do more to sustain the issue related to care for patients with public assistance. However, House File 48 would allow us to do more to meet the oral health care needs of the underserved in the 25 community Park Dental serves. I would like to thank Representative Norton for bringing the bill forward. I acknowledge the DHS and Governor Dayton's recognition of the reimbursement gap. The proposed increase, although characterized as a step in the right direction, remains woefully inadequate in covering current expense of oral health care delivery by nonprofit dentists like Park Dental and many other small private practices in our Minnesota communities. I encourage the committee to address the dental access needs that exist in the state by supporting House File 408. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there any anyone from the audience or public wish to testify? Are there any questions from the committee? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton, the governor's proposal for medical services for increases, $27 million, I believe, and this, your bill, allocates, is asking for $23 million just for dental services for fiscal year 14. Although needed, certainly I don't think there's an argument there. It appears that what maybe perhaps you're shooting for the stars and hope to hit the moon, or do you think that perhaps, you said it's a very bold bill, do you have maybe trepidations that being too bold might not get what we need for these dentists, for their rates?
Representative Quam and Representative McDonald, I said it was bold, and it is, but it's the right thing to do in this state. We have neglected this for a long, long time. As was testified with the pediatric patients, that group of third graders, those are, for the most part, preventable. There is dental care available to now in this era that makes cavities a thing of the past if the children are treated. So I think we just can't keep ignoring this. Do I think we may get every single thing that we're asking for here? Perhaps not, but I think we need to make our case, and I hope we have today, about how important this is, how much dental care is needed for the MA populations, and how by passing a bill like this, or maybe a little bit less if we have to settle for a star rather than the moon, or the opposite, I think is what you said, we'll do that. But we need to make our case, and I hope we have. I hope we have showed that we aren't doing the right thing in the state of Minnesota. Other states are doing the right thing, and I would like for us to at least have that as our goal. So,
Representative,
that answered your question.
Right? Yes, Representative Norton, thank you. And just hope you know I recognize that we have to do the right thing. I know there's a problem, and I appreciate your bill coming forward. I just concerned with the amount, and I hope that we do. I recognize that you understand we won't get it all, but we'll get something, and let's do something this session. So thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? I would like to mention that Representative Fritz and I had a clinic in Blooming Prairie that stopped servicing. And in fact, that clinic probably had patients across at least 5 state house districts. And so it is sorely missed. And with no further questions or testimony, Representative Nort renews her motion for House File 408 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus HHS finance bill.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Norton. And Representative Fritz.
Thank you.
Representative Fritz, on Tuesday we laid over House File 43 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. I'd like to take that bill up and would entertain a motion to move it to the general register. Representative Fritz, do you want to make that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 483 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the general register.
Representative Fritz, can you give us just a short statement on what that bill is?
That is the pulse oximetry bill.
Thank you.
Members remember the oxygen saturation pulse oximetry for newborns?
Thank you. Are there any questions?
We don't think so.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. It passes. And House File 486 has
43.
Passed to the general of 43. House File 43 has passed the general register.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments? We are adjourned. Yeah, that's good.